Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
The following is a presentation of the Four Center podcast feed.
From the center of the galaxy, this is the Four Center podcast feed, and this particular episode is the Bad Batch Report.
Oh man, I was going to do a Wookiee growl, Joseph, and I backed off on it. I sound like a horse. Sick. Oh, I got a last, you know, fail. I failed my improv session right there. Go with your instincts.
You were about to Wookiee roar, and then something made you question your Wookiee roar. What made you question your Wookiee roar?
And I don't do a good one. I've never done a good Chewbacca. Everyone's got a Chewbacca. I got a half decent Yoda. All right. I could fumble my way through Dexter. I can't do a Chewbacca. I got scared.
Did somebody Wookiee roar shame you at some point in life?
Myself. I think I looked in the mirror and said, not today, kid.
I kind of don't think, I think there are great Wookiee roars. I don't know if I've ever heard a truly bad Wookiee roar. Maybe just if you open your mouth and a like horn sound comes out instead of a Wookiee roar, like a cartoon.
Yeah. See,
that was great. Do it again. Here's my distinction.
Is that whales?
Perhaps. Yes, it sounds like one of the source sounds that Ben Burtt recorded.
Yes.
I would say perhaps it doesn't sound like Chewbacca, but it certainly sounds like a Wookiee.
There you go.
That sounds like a Wookiee on one of your favorite places, the patio at the Comedy Store, right? Sharing their opinions.
It does. Barking it out.
Well, the person making good Wookiee noises is Ken Napsok, and I'm Joseph Scrimshaw. If you're just catching up with our shows, we always do noises on our report shows just for fun and apparently for emotional discovery as well. But we are very happy to be here discussing an episode full of beautiful Wookiee roars. It is the second season of Bad Batch episode six, entitled Tribe, written by Matt Machenowitz, directed by Stuart Lee, and the story editor credit throughout the season continues to go to Matt Machenowitz. What was your viewing experience, Ken? Did you have the midnight experience watching this on Disney Plus on the Pacific timeline?
I didn't, and we're still kind of in that period of time where you and I are fortunate enough to have the screener, so I'd watch this last week, right after you and I recorded the Bad Batch report for episode five. And it was weird because I'll admit this, you loved episode five, and I think I really liked it. And I just, for some reason, it didn't connect with me as fully as you and other folks. Mm-hmm. I loved it. I want that to be clear. But, you know, sometimes it happens. And I think you and I finished recording. I warmed up some food and I said, I'm going to push forward because I know I love this show. And that just didn't feel right to me that I didn't love it as much as other folks. Right. And again, sometimes it just happens. Mm-hmm. And so I watched this right away and I was like, oh, here we go. Once the moment I first heard that great Wookiee roar, I was like, here we go. The main event a lot of people have been waiting for since Celebration. Gungi returns. Or, yes, you and I have said Gungi before, and Gungi seems to be the answer. But I would debate with Star Wars that as a comic that chooses words and syllables on purpose, Gungi is stronger than Gungi. But that's a different debate for another show, all right?
You feel like Gungi is just a stronger, in what way? That it's more punchy, it's more comedic, it's clearer?
If your punchline ends with the word muffin, try cupcake, right? Like that's someone explained to me. And Gungi sounds stronger. Not that the strength of a Wookiee, but just it just sounds more right to me than Gungi. But I stand corrected by Hunter's interpretation of the word. So anyways, all I have to say, I'm sidetracking myself. I watched it again this morning. And I realized today, Joseph, today was the first day I've watched it on the Bad Batch Season 2 on Disney Plus. Even last week, when I could have brought up the Disney Plus version, I sat down by habit in front of my screener with our email in front of it. And I actually this morning finally watched Bad Batch on my TV. So that was my experience. That was fun.
That is a great experience. And I like your distraction. I want to understand why Gungi speaks to you. And that makes sense. Yeah. My personal interpretation of comedy is that it is violent. It breaks things in order to create the joy of laughter. So it is violent in the pursuit of a positive thing, laughter. Mm-hmm. So it makes sense to for the comedic punchline to have vowels and sounds that are percussive because it sounds like it's punchy. It's hard. It's violent, you know? Mm. So that makes sense to me why you would like Gungi, but also why ultimately this character in this episode would be called Gungi because... ultimately soft throughout the violence.
Yes. Actually, it's good. First of all, I've never heard a drummer describe comedy in that way, and it's beautiful. Oh, it's beautiful.
It's percussive. You need to hit the laugh line exactly the way you hit the cymbal. And sometimes you need a brush instead of a stick. Anyway, we are getting very distracted in our various life experiences.
We are indeed. But I think you're right. The Gungi ends up being rather appropriate after this episode.
Yeah, and I love this story of your viewing experience. We're lucky to have the screeners. We've joked about before, they do have our emails right in the middle of the screen. Sometimes that's distracting, sometimes not. I think the worst moment, it was that moment in the Solitary Clone where he just had a very emotional close-up of Cody, and he just was wearing my email as a mustache. Like,
yes.
That Halloween costume. But I feel like so lucky to have these screeners because they are allowing me to get on top of our recording of Bad Batch, spend a little bit more time letting it sink in, all that great stuff. So I also just really, really love the Midnight Experience, but also the Bad Batch just harkens back to these days of having a morning cartoon. So I sat down on a Friday morning and I was like, I'm going to have a Friday morning cartoon, and ended up shedding a tear into my English muffin. This episode was definitely... I was not full on racking sobs, but water did come from my eyes. I thought it was really amazing. So I really enjoyed that experience of being able to view it. Is a nice light morning cartoon.
Yeah.
With some darkness to it. Dark leading to hope, much like comedy, darkness that leads to hope. Was my experience. So we're getting into our overall reactions to the episode itself as well. What was your overall reaction? I'm sensing that you loved it. Is that correct?
Yeah, I did. There's just a real sense of warmth that emerges from at times a sad episode, an episode that confronts trauma head on, trauma the experience by children specifically. We're talking to talk about that here, but the sadness of Gunji, all of it though led to just a lot of warmth, the connection, the tribe, the home. Yana, the character, this kind of matriarch of this particular Wookiee tribe. I loved all that. And I think you and I are in a line of this, so I don't want to take any words away from you, sir, but I love, and I don't mean this snark with some snark or a bite. I love that Gunji is back, not to give you answers, but back to find his own way forward. Mm-hmm. There's no big reveals, this and that. In fact, you don't even know a lot of the information. Again, we'll get into those details. I just thought it was real powerful to use him in that way, to tell his story, not a story. He doesn't even speak much in this episode, right? Especially once we get to, there's a lot of reactions, a lot of like exploration, wonderment, sadness, recovery. A lot of those things are going on with him, and you see a lot through his eyes, and you see his eyes. And that was a great way to deliver it. And I think we've always acknowledged the Bad Batch is often our view to the galaxy at this time, right? That's just mm-hmm. one of the things going on with the show. Not that they're not characters experiencing it, but we get to go around with them. And this was really clear, and that tactic was really meaningful this time around. Not that it hasn't been before, but it really got me that they're going around to this world, and each world, and each community, and seeing the effects, and we get to feel it in this real powerful way.
Yeah, a really visceral way. This was a visceral episode, both the sadness, the horror, and the joy and the community and the respect and all these great things that we'll talk about. Yeah, I've been so looking forward to this episode, and it did not disappoint. I've been looking forward to it from a theoretical, imagined way. We talked a lot in the first season when we were really enjoying The Bad Batch and realizing like, oh, wow, this is a tour of the horror of the Empire at its inception. And discussing, hey, man, could Quinlan Vos show up or someone else? We would love to see a Jedi. We would love for them to meet a Jedi because they're our tour guides, the Bad Batch. Mm-hmm. So the Jedi are going through something that is similar to what the Bad Batch is going through. They've lost everything. Now they need to find new identities. It'd be great to see that through a Jedi's eyes. So I've been waiting for a Jedi story. And then Gunji popped up in the trailer and everybody just roared with Wookiee excitement. And I was really excited for that character. You can check out our Data Bank Dive episode we did a couple weeks ago about Gunji or Gungi, whatever you want to call him. We love that character. So I was really looking forward to it. And the episode, it didn't disappoint, and it surprised in a great way. It sort of surprised me by sticking to its blasters about what the show is, you know?
Yeah.
I felt like exactly what you're saying, like overall, this episode absolutely made me feel the weight in the horror of this time period, like that everywhere you turn, there's destruction, there's greed, there's horror. It's awful. But then within that, where does the light remain? You know, there's the moment in the Kenobi show where Obi-Wan is affected by seeing the etching on the wall. That I don't remember the exact quote, but the etching is something along the lines of, you know, the light never dies. It may dim from time to time. That's a very bad paraphrasing, but that's the spirit of it. And I feel like that's so present in this of like, yep, the darkness is everywhere, but that doesn't mean that there aren't still flickers and flames of light. And I just feel them in this episode. These ideas of respect, honor, home, nature. There's so much beauty in this dark, dark episode, you know? And on my second viewing this morning, to watch it without my email in it and to get some screen captures and whatnot, this old Star Wars story of the Wookiees versus the Trandoshans, the Wookiees versus the Trandoshans just is light side versus dark side, the way they respond to community and nature versus greed and dominance and all these things. And I think that was so prevalent in the episode. So that big picture stuff. And then there's the Gunji specific stuff in this episode, which I was surprised by it being exactly what this show has been doing, right? Mm. So exactly what you're saying, when Gunji pops up in the trailers, there's the joke / hope. Did he rescue Grogu, right? Or is he on a mission? Does he know Quinlan Vos? Where is this going to lead us? And all that stuff is great and exciting. And some shows tell those stories with those bigger connections. But I feel like Bad Batch has just been a story of how are individuals making it at this moment in the galaxy. So by being extremely direct and simple, this was a fresh Jedi story. This was a Jedi who just wants to go home. You know, I love that it isn't big. I love that it's not he joined the path, you know? I love it that it's just what this child needs, right? Because he's a Padawan, right? And just, you know, going from the horror of Order 66 to the most logical and most emotionally moving place from that child's perspective, right? Of basically, I was sent to magical boarding school as an infant, but everyone there died and I have no one to ask, so I guess I'll go home or try to. The brutal simplicity of that was really beautiful and felt really fresh, because it isn't about like, we've seen a lot of great Jedi stories from Kenobi, from Cal Kestis, to be like, how can I continue to be a Jedi in this time? And Dungey's younger and he's just like, I was sent to school, everybody died, I guess I'll go home, is a different, fresh story.
Yeah, you're saying some wonderful stuff here, and why it was really moving and affecting. And going back to that celebration stuff, and this is one of those things, I think you and I have explained this before, maybe at the risk of over-explaining it, but I don't want to stop explaining my thoughts on this stuff. Like, you go to Celebration, you see that trailer, and you think, maybe he rescued Grogu. Maybe we see how he escaped Order 66. Maybe he joins the fight. Then Kenobi comes out. Oh, maybe he's part of the path. Maybe his name's on the wall. All that stuff is wonderful. And all that stuff could end up being revealed, right? And Gunji could have been Grogu's savior. Who knows, right? All that stuff. He might return the end of Bad Batch Season 2 and be like, you know what? I'm ready to join the fight. He might. Wanting that stuff, thinking about stuff, getting excited about that stuff is certainly part of the fun. And I keep saying that because we want everyone to have fun here. But when this episode went the direction it did, I was excited. And you keep saying a word we are absolutely going to discuss. And it's child. Even I have to admit, coming out of Celebration, knowing he's popping back up, I had a little bit of the, yes, he's here to pick up his blade and join the fight, or he's off doing something else now that can sync up. And I forgot that Gungi is still a child. Maybe, you know, you see Ahsoka, the precocious 14-year-old who goes from snips to a hero, right? And you have that version, and maybe that was in my head. I don't know. But the fact that this was played as Gungi, and Omega are children, but they don't get the beat, was a powerful, powerful thing. And a reminder, because even I just forgot, Gungi is a name on a stat sheet for me. He's a Jedi out there for the fight. And that doesn't take into account what he actually is. Padawan on the loose against his will and way, and trying to find his way forward in this horrible time. And that's why there's these great moments of wonder that the episode has, where Gungi's face lights up in awe at seeing his people or seeing what they're doing. The little details we'll discuss, and also the moments of trauma, him in a corner with his head down, beautifully played. That's how you do it. And I loved everything about that.
Yeah, absolutely. I think you're saying something really good. I think there is a power, and I will admit, I think I responded to it, and there's nothing wrong with it. The way Gungi pops up in that trailer, right? We love the character. We want the character to win. We know that the character has inherent power. He's a Wookiee and a Jedi Wookiee, right? He's passed the trial of the gathering. He's been out in the galaxy. He survived Order 66. So in this dark time, in the trailer, when you see him roar and ignite his blade, my emotion is like, yeah, he's our hero. Get their asses, you know? And so I'm ready to fist pump for Gungi. And I think that's what it is that emotion, which is fine and great, made me look past the most obvious thing of he's a child with no home. And the fact that that's what the story was, I think that's why it surprised me. I think that's a very well observed on your part.
Oh, thank you. I get 1 out of 10 every now and then. And again, a reminder of engaging with the story as it's presented, something that has been at the core of what we've done, I think, since you said that wonderful bumper sticker phrase a few years ago. And I could admit, coming into this, feeling exactly what you're feeling. Yes, that saber's coming out. Maybe his buddy Quinlan's there. Let's go get him. And that's not what the story wanted to do. And to your point of Bad Batch has stuck to its blasters. I love that phrase too, of doing what it wants to do and what it needs to do.
Yeah, exactly. And then final big picture thing for me is, wrestling with the pronunciation. His name is pronounced 18 different ways in the arc of the Clone Wars that introduces him us to him. I gravitated and stuck to Gungi for some reason. But since this episode is about respect, he roared his name, and it was translated by the Bad Batch as Gungi. I'm going to assume that that is the correct pronunciation and be respectful of Gungi.
There you go. People can stop tweeting or YouTube commenting, you're saying it wrong. All right, you can stop. Yeah, we're on board. We're on board.
Yep. We will be Team Gungi until something leads us away, or we probably make multiple mistakes in this episode, but we'll try for Gungi. All right, we've tapped into some of the big ideas by talking about our overall reaction, but let's drill down into some of the big specific themes and ideas. Do you mind if I start with a big one, Ken?
Oh, please, sir.
So I think there's so much going on in this episode and it's all intertwined. But one of the biggest ones to me is just this idea of, you know, where is home and how does home help give us identity, help create who we are? I think it's pretty direct in what is actually happening to Gungi, you know, that he's been stripped of everything he knows. I think it's easy to kind of forget that for Jedi, the temple was their home. The actual Jedi were their family. So they lost their physical home. They lost their family. And then they lost any trajectory in their life, right? Their purpose. He was training Gungi his whole life to be a Jedi, to be a defender of peace and justice, to be one with the Force, and with the exception of maybe being one with the Force, almost all of that is stripped of him. So he has no identity because it was based in this group, in this place. It's gone. So it's then fascinating for him to just go like, okay, what do I do with none of this? Oh, I guess I'll return home. But then we get this great thread that's woven throughout the episode of there are some parts of him that are intrinsically Wookiee, intrinsically of Kashyyyk, but the thing that brought tears to my eyes was, but he doesn't quite know the ways of his people, of his planet. Some he does, some he senses, some are intrinsic or natural, but those beats where Omega asks him, do you remember anything about this planet, and he roars, and it gets translated for us, from my dreams. And then when they're first just trying to bring him to a village that they have a contact in, right? And then that doesn't work. And then, you know, when the Bad Batch is talking to Yana, like, we're trying to take him home, but he doesn't know what village he's from. Uh-huh. I loved how it seemed like he was either a little bit ambivalent or just plain didn't quite know this Wookiee intimacy move. Of touching foreheads, right? It's a fascinating thing for me to be sitting at home watching this imaginary species and going, canonically, I know you forehead touch, right? But this poor character, this poor Gungi, doesn't necessarily know that. That great look of him watching all of the other Wookiees commune with the trees, something that's probably familiar to him conceptually, being a Jedi who communes with nature, but still kind of watching and learning his own culture, you know, and reconnecting to it. So I really thought that was a lot of the beauty of Gungi's actual journey. And then I love that it mirrors not only Omega's journey, which gets called out, but the reason I wanted to start from this place is I think this journey of Gungi in this one episode mirrors to me the entire show. This is the story of the Bad Batch. The same thing happened to them, right? Their home is gone, their purpose is gone, and they are wrestling week after week after week to go, who do we want to be? We don't have our purpose. We don't have our home. We're in touch with ourselves. We know who we are. We know what we believe in. But what noun can we attach to that? How can we go about our days and provide for ourselves and be who we want to be? So I wanted to start from there and hear what your thoughts were.
I think it's a wonderful place to start. And you're talking about the Jedi Temple is a home. We know Kamino is gone. That was a home for them from away. Omega in a way. I almost said Amiga, which would be maybe even correct. and the connection with Kashyyyk. We'll talk about the dreams a moment, I'm sure, even in lore connections, canon stuff. And then the flip side of that is what I think drove it home even more powerfully for me is The empire, and it's clearly stated, is destroying homes, destroying communities. That's not new to us, but I think it's important to concentrate on that and what the effects of that are, right? What's the fallout of that? It's not just about resources. That's very much a big part of it, because that's why the empire is there. That's why they're paying the Trandoshans to burn down this land and raise it to its roots there. And this connects to things you and I have talked about and love to explore in Solo and what we see in Andor. This keeps coming back for a reason. In this 19-year period between the films and now these shows filling in, just continues to drive home that thing. It's not just a territorial grab by the Empire. It's destroying individuals down to what their core is. And to have that driven home at the end with both Omega and Gunji sitting there, all of them looking for a new version of home, a tribe, a family, and perhaps one day we all will need to find a new path. And they're in that thing, and the Empire stands in the way, not just because they're this big menacing soldier at the end of the tunnel, but because they've removed so much of the infrastructure of your own soul here across the galaxy.
Oh, there's a great and horrible bumper sticker phrase: the infrastructure of your soul. And I love that point. Yeah, because this episode goes out of its way to remind us. They're not just mining resources to do what they want to do. The Empire, Palpatine in particular, knows that people will get strength through having place, having community, having culture.
Right.
He's taking everything from people on purpose so they feel utterly powerless, which ties back to why I was kind of thinking of this big picture idea of, where is home and how does it give us identity, and I think it's really fascinating to try to put yourself into the perspective of the Bad Batch or Gunji to really feel the depth of this, of like, how do you define home? It almost even as a question to you, Ken, if you had to leave your house, if you couldn't be in the state, California, if you couldn't be with your partner, you couldn't do podcasts, right? They would suck. But also just in the infrastructure of your soul, as you said, if you had been stripped of these things that are your like sort of primary identifiers in your own mind, who would you be? How would you find identity again?
Man, that's a scary question. Yeah, it's like the why of this stuff that I do. And I think even it's taken years to discover. Like I get in front of microphones not just to entertain, but hopefully provide comfort and companionship to those in need, right? And how do I find that without this stuff is where I'd have to go into, I guess. That's a deep question for a Wednesday morning, sir, but I think that's where I would head. But yeah, what can you do? And look, I'll tell you, you know how it affects me? Again, this is a chosen career path, entertainment in general, but usually microphones 1 inch or 2 inches from my face. The prospect of, well, do I have to go get another job to supplement income? What do I have to do? And, job's a job, but that seems to be separating me from what I am and who I am, right? And that's the fear attached to it. And how can I keep myself through that time? Which is also something I struggled in a day job, not just talking about professions here. It's deeper than that. But that job wasn't me, but man, it sure took a lot of me. And that's a sense of home I have. Maybe. All right. I'm going to go make some notes.
Yeah. No, I mean, I think, I don't need to go into my own life history, but I've had those moments where I've lost things that are part of my identity or been afraid to let things go because I feel like they help form my identity. And when you're separated from those things, it forces you to go on this infrastructure of your soul journey, like you just did, and say, why do I do this? And if those things were taken from me and I couldn't, how else would I respond to this core need, this core instinct? I really think that's what's going on at the heart of this episode, but also the heart of Bad Batch. I think, that this moment at the end where Hunter and Yana are kind of looking at them and going, they're both kids. They shouldn't have to go through this. And Yana, this wise elder, says, as this child has found his new home, perhaps one day we will all find a new path. And it's almost like Yana's just like, yeah, I just met you, Hunter, but I, but I saw through your soul that that's where you are at too, that you are still trying to find your new path, that you know a lot of what makes you who you are, but you've been separated from it. So how are you going to find a new path where you can truly reconnect with yourself?
Yeah.
Some other big ideas that I got that I want to discuss, but I also want to hear what how you kind of broke down the episode of what the big ideas were for you.
Yeah, two other big ones for me, but kind of dovetailing out of what you just were talking about, particularly with Hunter at the end and then the batch itself. This episode for me, again, art speaks to you in specific ways sometimes as an individual. I put down intent and purpose, and this began with these spiders. By the way, I might be okay with no more spiders in Star Wars for a while. We keep getting wonderful design spiders that freak me out a little bit. It's no different, but they're wonderful creatures and they sacrificed for the cause here. But the spiders won't attack you unless you pose a threat. I think we've heard that kind of stuff before in Star Wars, right? We kind of get that. Raise a fist, get a fist, that type of mentality. I think that's fair. But I took it as this. What are you here for? It's almost as if the spiders were asking that. What is your intent? What is your purpose? And they're saying this to the Bad Batch. Yeah, Gunji right away kind of, you know, like you said earlier, he doesn't know this world outside of dreams, but he knows put the weapon down and let me put a hand out and feel through the force. Let me communicate and let me get, you know, let me connect with this, these organics, so to speak. And a lot of that goes into other stuff later. We're going to get to the Wookiees, the trees and everything. But I just think the purpose of your actions was all through this episode. This was this starts with a run, a mission for the Bad Batch. It's another delivery and they're, you know, got chain codes, they're forging all that stuff, but it had darker implications, which by the way, I love that Echo and Omega are the ones kind of on the outside go, I got a bad feeling about this. Mm-hmm. And so it turns what is a normal mission. They got to analyze their intent and purpose of what they're doing, going about the galaxy. And they clearly have a code. You can't transport living beings. You can't do that. But I wonder if this is one of those episodes that you will look back on. And even though it's not, this episode doesn't end with Hunter going, we shall now fight the Empire. He doesn't do that, but it pushes them to analyze, continue to analyze the intent and purpose. And I think we're moving to that big kind of thing. And I like the way they're handling it. So that is there. And that flows. I absolutely want to get your thoughts on that. And that flows in this idea that comes to the episode of being an ally and what that truly means. But it all begins with your intent and purpose here.
No, I agree. I think we're really going to similar places with different titles. I really thought about everything you're talking about is sort of this ongoing question of the Bad Batch of what's worth fighting for. And I really agree with you. The Bad Batch is, you know, particularly Hunter is not ready to just plunge into rebellion, right? To proactively attack the Empire like Saw Gerrera or, you know, Rex it would appear is doing sort of isolated missions that those are more about rescuing people, but he is actively doing something, right? And Hunter's got this push pull of just like, just take care of your family, take care of this kid Omega, which is clearly a concern in this episode. And I'm not ready to just go like our whole life is about, you know, throwing ourselves out there against this big evil. But he's not also entirely comfortable with the jobs that Sid is doing and is sending them on. And I thought this was a great reminder of that. You know, you touched on this. When they're getting off the ship, Hunter says, Sid said the Vanguard Axis is notorious for illegal smuggling. And you know, Hunter's going like, please, please, please just let it be chain coast. Please, please. Mm-hmm. Right. I think that's why he specifically has Echo and Omega wait, because I think he knows like, yeah, this one's going to be on the line of the kind of jobs we do, but we need money and need to keep the family safe. These are the two who are going to have a problem, right? So you know, it's not convenience, it's really accurate to the character, right? So we start the episode with this reminder that Hunter and therefore the rest of the Bad Batch are dabbling in murky moral grounds that they're not incredibly happy about. And then for me, the entire rest of the episode is a checklist of lines where Hunter goes, okay, well, but not this. And it is actually a lot of things when you break it down, right? Hunter's normally the one who's like, oh, God, I'm not sure about this and okay. All right. But right away we get family when the family's in danger, right? They didn't get paid for those chain codes, right? That great quote of the cause that blaster fire is either Echo or Omega, right? And there's no question about that. Of course, he's protecting Echo and Omega, right? Family. That's a line that can't be crossed. Selling humans, that's a line that can't be crossed for Hunter. And he says it explicitly, right? You can't smuggle living beings to Vanguard Axis droids. just general child endangerment, right? That's a line that you can't cross with Hunter. He says, we came because Gunji was in trouble. Jedi or not, he's still a child. He needs his people. So we're getting all these things where, like, Hunter's normally like, okay, well, let's just deal with the murky reality so that I can protect my immediate family and we can get by and push off this question of, you know, who are we ultimately? What's our noun? And then this episode is a laundry list of like, okay, but not that, but not that, but not that. So it kind of had me fist pumping for Hunter, because it was this reminder of like, yeah, he's trying to be cautious, but this is who he is. These are his core values on display in this episode.
Wonderful. I put down compassion, action, compassion, and action. And that slides into me, for me, a little bit into what you're saying, this Hunter checklist. I love that. It's like it used to be in baseball card packs, you get the very boring checklist card, but at least you knew what you needed to collect after that. I think Hunter's got his checklist card and it's starting to add up, or it's a Google sheet with an auto sum and it's starting to add up on the bottom to Rebel. And it's slowly working its way because it is who he is.
Yep. Yep. And I thought within that of the sort of the what's worth fighting for, there's also this idea that you were touching on of allies. I think that is also on Hunter's checklist of like, you don't abandon allies. Because like, Echo's on Hunter all the time, right? I mean, even when they don't have dialogue, Echo's just eye drilling Hunter in episodes that they should be doing more, right?
Yeah.
And Echo says, hey, the Wookiees were our allies for years. And he gets no argument from Hunter, right?
Right.
So I think this idea of allies is really brought up. And then if you break down the actual actions of the episode, it is great classic Star Wars stuff of stronger together. And you help one person, they help you. Even at the very beginning, Omega, you know, helps Gungi. And in that same scene, you know, right when Omega is cornered by one of the droids, Gunji pops out and rescues her, right? Then the Bad Batch gets the Kashyyyk. They rescue that Wookiee captive. That Wookiee captive immediately comes back and rescues them. You know, to that point where, you know, at the end, Hunter is really preaching the idea of allies and stronger together. When at first, Yan is like, well, they're coming. We just got to go. And the Bad Batch is like, no, Hunter. Hunter is the one who makes the argument. No, stay and fight. You don't have to do this alone. Even the trees are allies. Mm-hmm. Everything about our heroes, everything about the Wookiees is coded as you help someone, they will come and help you. We are all allies, stronger together.
Yeah, and what I like for me, I looked at, you know, kind of analyzing what that means, and you're saying some wonderful stuff here. The great quote from Hunter to Yana, you don't have to do this alone. I thought that was really powerful. But that the Wookiees kind of were in a way prepared not just to run and survive. I wouldn't say it's running away from a fight just to survive another day. I think that's valuable too. But this idea of being an ally, Hunter doesn't fully understand this land. He doesn't understand the way. He has that great quote of, oh, the trees have a plan. All right. He doesn't fully understand it. And I think one of the things for me, this is a personal take maybe, but in order to be an ally, I don't have to understand everything about another person's path, decisions, or choices. They don't need my understanding. They need my support. And that's the beginning of the relationship, and it goes from there. Then it becomes symbiotic, like you're saying, and Obi-Wan would tell you. and I just thought that was a play a lot, too, where all of it totally makes sense, and it's all powerful, and it's we're together, community stronger. But also, you know, I am not of this land. I'm not Kashyyyk. You know, not on Kashyyyk. I'm not a Wookiee. But it ain't about that. I'm here for you because you're here for us. And that's all we need right here. That's all an ally needs is just support. And the rest will come and we'll be stronger together. I just thought that was to break it down to that level, down to even the trees and how the Wookiees viewed it. Because the Wookiees don't even view it as their land. They view it as the trees land.
Yep. Yeah, no, you're saying a bunch of stuff I love. I think that's really a great perspective that Hunter is really saying, we would like to help you fight. You don't have to do this alone. I'm offering and asking if you want that support. And then it is 100% your call how we fight, right? Mm-hmm. They're not pulling any like, we're soldiers. We know tactics. They're like, the trees, great, you know, which I think is really good. And I want to talk more about that general theme. But one thing I wanted to point out while we're on this point of allies in the circle of help it's so great to pull in this classic Wookiees versus Trandoshans, right? Mm-hmm. And not all Trandoshans are
Skeer,
awful.
Skeer, you know? Looking at you. You're good.
Looking at Skeer, looking at Sid even, who has, I think, you know, a heart of gold under those scales. Scales of perhaps self-interest, a heart of gold. Everything that these Trandoshans are doing is about disrespect. It's about competition. It's about dominance, right? There's that line where Commander Venomor offers 100 Wookiee pelts to whoever finds the Jedi. So instead of let's all work together to find the Jedi, let's make it about competition. And it's kind of a comic moment, but like he's so desperate to get the kill on Gungi, you know, he whips out that flamethrower and burns one of his own Trandoshan people. And, you know, on one level, it's like, great. The good guys are doing good guys stuff. The bad guys are doing bad guy stuff. But exactly how it is constructed, that it is the difference between offering help, allyship, respect versus everybody is in it for themselves. Even a team who are allegedly working together are always in competition with one another.
Yeah.
Those ideas are important and resonant because I do feel strongly that they echo into our real world. And in my opinion, a lot of our real world problems of, you know, when I talk about worrying about competition, it's not about sitting down and enjoying a football game. It's about making everything in life a competition because it gets into this headspace of everyone is out for themselves. Like we can say nice things, but the truth is Venomor is right. We're all out for ourselves. So an episode like this that argues the opposite is really powerful to me.
I absolutely love that. And stand right there with you on how these kind of things and analyzing these kind of things help you look at some of the stuff that goes on out there in the real world. Like we're in some Star Wars bubble, you know, out there. And it does feel there. Look, you and I are in a industry, a space where it's like, you know, power, dominance, rage clicks are going to get you seemingly a lot farther than those other folks. And it can be daunting, overwhelming. It can be sad, but who are those folks? And I think they've already lost the battle. Change is here and there's nothing you can do about it. Only fight against it, I guess. And that's only going to go so far and you're eating each other up and you're destroying everyone. And I see it time and time again. And Star Wars being a tale of so many things, but a tale of good versus evil, right? Good versus bad, right? To analyze the why and the what and the how of what bad is, I think it's very important and very sometimes maybe overlooked about the individual things. It's a funny beat. He burns his fellow, egg mate or whatever, nest mate, whatever. It was kind of played, not funny, but action funny, whatever you want to look at it. But it's in the actions, right? Exactly. Yeah. Your point of, you know, let's not work together to find the Jedi. You find it, you win. That's important. You break it down to a micro level of what's going on here. This is what Star Wars is constantly communicating, which is why I believe it's such a powerful story in our society and culture and history. It's important to look at these things that way.
And you follow a leader like Venomor. Ken, if you were one of those Trandoshans and you found Gungi, do you think Venomor would actually give you 100 Wookiee pelts? Or do you think he would murder you and take credit?
Yeah. 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 I think I would choose the murder option.
Well, let's move from murder to this other big idea that I think we're both circling around, which is this overall theme of, I just wrote down respect.
Yeah.
You can get into the details, but there's respect from the Bad Batch for Gungi, respect for nature, just kind of respect for each other in lots of different ways. Diving in a little bit, I think it kicks off with just so much respect from the various members of the Bad Batch for Gungi's pain and perspective, right? Mm-hmm. There is no pushback on how a Jedi would feel about them, right? Omega's always out to help people and curious to learn other people's perspective. But that Hunter starts right away with, like, you know, when Omega's like, well, you know, just because he's scared doesn't mean he shouldn't eat, you know, all happy and glowing. And Hunter's saying, like, he doesn't trust us. And Tech saying, well, seeing how all clones were given an order to execute the Jedi, he has good reason to be cautious. Like, it's nothing but respect for Gungi's perspective. Gungy. And then also I just feel like, you know, over the years of Star Wars, you know, sometimes there are jokes about, you know, Wookiees. Sometimes they're kind of like a fun sidekick character, right? And then sometimes they're treated with like great respect. And there wasn't anything too sort of like, we can talk about Wrecker getting into Wookiee culture. But I just think the way that Hunter and Tech made a point of interpreting and communicating with Gungy, and true, there was no like, I don't know what he's saying, you know. It was, I know Kashyyyk, or I know Shira Wookiee, and it's a little rusty, and Tech ripping out his device and wanting everyone in the group to know what Gungy was saying and thinking. Communication and allowing for communication and wanting to understand what somebody else has to say is respect. So I just thought the episode starts from this perspective of respect from the Bad Batch to this poor lost Wookiee child.
Yeah, I think that's a great way to look at it. The understanding the why of why they are there in front of you, right? And not, you said something earlier that I really love too about it's great that Bad Batch is like, we're going to help you. But then they're not like, cool, here's our map. We're going to tell you what to do. It's how can we help, right? And there's a big difference. And if someone says, cool, I don't know, do you got any ideas? Then it's open for you to whip out that map. But I think it all is about respect for the person. They're trying to understand their perspective. Great way to look at it. Even the example of, Echo and the Wookiee soup is not for me. And then comes around to understanding a little bit more, and I'll give it a try. And look, I'm rewarded for something new. I'm rewarded for this, something new and different in my life. And it all does flow out of respect. I love the moment. You're highlighting the moment of Omega with her pure of heart, right? He's got it. And it's just almost like, give him a moment. Give them a moment, because respecting who they are and what's brought them here, important stuff.
Yeah, give him a little space and let's communicate, so he knows who we are. You know,
yeah.
And then there was, not subtle, but there was just so much respect for nature and for Wookiee culture, right? I mean, this is classic Star Wars stuff of the flowing and the organic and nature, and the cycles of nature are to be understood, respected. Gungy. Showing the Kinrath spider creatures, they don't pose a threat. You know, the good side of his Jedi training, right? I loved how this kind of episode really reminded us of kind of Hunter's skills, right? He's a tracker, right? He's a little bit coded as, being a little bit more understanding of nature and what nature is trying to tell you, right? And I loved him, Hunter, almost cutting an ad with Smokey the Bear with just immediately getting those shovels out, right? Because that's a detail that was not needed for the episode, right? It could have just been like, yeah, there's some fires. They go out. Don't worry about it.
Yeah.
But that they stop and use the shovels to stop the flames from spreading is, a reminder of, the contrast between the Bad Batch and the horror that the Empire is stripping this planet of resources. So there's all that respect for nature. But then so much with Wookiee culture, right? The communing with the trees and the way we Tech says they believe the planet belongs to the trees. There's no joke about that. The way Hunter says the trees have a plan, whatever they say, like we're talking about, like it's kind of acknowledge of Hunter being like, cool, don't know what that means, but I'm going with it. It's not a look at these weirdos, right? The trying their food thing of Wrecker getting really into it. And yeah, like you're just saying, Echo going, yeah. And then trying it afterwards. And then in contrast for that, what we were talking about earlier, another great detail that didn't need to be in the episode, but is there to drive these points home, is the horror and villainy of Venomor destroying the carved stones, right? Those aren't resources. Those aren't Wookiees who are resisting. That's just we want to strip you of everything. The infrastructure of your soul, as you said, we want to destroy your culture. The fact that he's offering 100 Wookiee pelts, it's all in contrast to what the Bad Batch is doing of, respecting Wookiee culture.
Yeah. And you said earlier, even from the trees, some of the stuff is repeating themes from Star Wars, and I often love that when it just shows different versions of it and drives the point home for this morality tale we love so much. I do feel bad about picking on Trandoshans, but, you know, proof's in the pudding a little bit here. So,
look, yes, we're not saying we're not forgetting Seeker. We're not forgetting Sid. Yeah. We're not forgetting, yeah, the great, I need to look up her name, but Bossk's sister from that great short story in the From a Certain Point of View, Empire Strikes Back book. Yeah, but that was a kind of a joy for me, too, of like some of this Wookiee imagery, right? That mm-hmm. goes back to the holiday special, right? And the Wookiee-Trandoshan rivalry has been a thing in Star Wars for years and years and years. So to see kind of a fresh, brand new episode of Star Wars kind of dealing in really old ideas was fun as well.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Yeah. Final big thought for me is... it's kind of a nuance on a lot of the things we've been talking about of, you know, the respect and the understanding and what's worth fighting for. But the episode had a ton of mirroring of, we've talked about that with Omega, that's a consistent thing when she's looking up to a mentor like a Hunter or Fee in last week's episode, the literal mirroring as she's learning. Explicit lines of, you know, comparing Omega to Gunji as child warriors who don't have the space to be children. There's that shot of them fighting side by side and they kind of look at each other as if to say, like, we're in this together. We're the same. It's kind of played for comedy, but Wrecker, there's nothing mocking about Wrecker's Wookiee roar and enjoying the soup. It's finding similarity, right? It's going like, this stuff is all awesome, right? There's the mirroring at the end of Hunter and Yana kind of commiserating as, you know, the elders of their group who are burdened with the care of this group, including the younglings. There's so much direct kind of one-to-one, as well as Gunji's entire journey mirroring the Bad Batch's overall journey in the show. And the reason I bring it up is total personal opinion, I think there could be buzzwords, you know, like diversity that can, I think sometimes we are at risk of, we say these words so much that we get disconnected from their deepest meaning, you know?
Really good, yeah.
And to me, when I think about diversity, it's this. Learning from what is different and celebrating what is different while also drawing comfort from what is the same. It's not turns out we're all the same. We are different, but yet there are these similarities too. And the differences and the similarities are to be celebrated. And I feel like that's what's going on in all this mirroring.
I love that. I love that as a concept. It's something that I'm, you know, I say a lot is the shared unique experience of even being a Star Wars fan. Mm. It's important to us here at Force Center. It really, truly is, especially these days, you know, some stuff recently with some attacks on fans who have maybe a different look, feel, perspective and lifestyle than you. What a counter to Star Wars, everything Star Wars stands for, right? And how we all are here to love this Star Wars thing. We all have some things we love, but we all bring something different to it. And we can learn from each other's joy while also sharing in the same joys. And that's just on a Star Wars level. When that flows on out into the real world, I think you're really right there. And I do agree, you know, sometimes, you know, I even joke, like, nuance has become this word. I don't know what it means to a lot of people now. Does it just mean gray Jedi? Like, it's just, I don't, like, what does that really mean to you? You know, and it just becomes a buzzword out there and it can truly lose, like you said, the meaning, but the why behind it.
Yeah.
Why it's important. And I really like what you said in this episode, them going through this here. It is truly a shared, unique adventure for everyone involved in this episode.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Any other final big picture thoughts for you before we take a break?
I guess I just want to highlight a little bit of the things we've kind of dumped into all the individual themes we talked about, but the fact that this does focus on two children. You mentioned the line at the end with Hunter. They don't get to be children, and a lot has to do with the war and the situation going on around. But the Star Wars being this generational tale, and you see, you know, the triggers of trauma in Gunji are very clear, and Omega might be still doing that, and how Star Wars is, I think, always commenting on that, about what you're doing today affecting those coming up behind you, and why it's important to analyze it here. And you see some of the results of it, even if some of it might be done with good intentions, right? a rebellion or a war against the Clone Wars, whatever. There might be some good intentions, but look behind you. And I think this episode looks behind all these characters to see what's being experienced by these children. They're referred to as children in this episode.
Mm-hmm. No, I so agree with you. And I think it's really, really good to highlight that, because I think it is also what's at stake so much for Hunter. I think it's one of the reasons he's not just like, yeah, let's go blasters mm-hmm. blazing. Let's fight the Empire. You know, it's like this is a child. And yeah. She's competent and she wants to go out there and explore the galaxy. We need to support that. But also, I just feel like Hunter, like, yeah, I think he's, you know, waking up at night in sweats, you know, not literally physical sweats, in sweating, waking up at night, sweating, you know, you're wondering if he's, you know, taught Omega, you know, how to stop, drop and roll.
Yeah. Yeah. Though I would like some Bad Batch sweats, now that you mention it there. Be all right.
I would absolutely be down for that merch. All right. Those are some of the big picture ideas. We're going to take a quick break, and then we'll be back to discuss some favorite moments, some action, some comedy, some canon, all that great stuff in just a moment.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
And we are back to continue our discussion of Season 2, Episode 6 of the Bad Batch Tribe. We are going to talk action. There was definitely some action in this very moving episode. Ken, did you have some favorite action moments?
I did. Let me start here. It's a Gungy roll call of things. And you and I, obviously, even this episode, we always want to analyze the why and how you fight and what's your intent and purpose. But there's a lot of moments in this episode where Gungy's just fighting back right away, and I loved it. From the beginning, the moment he has a window of opportunity to fight for his life, to fight for his survival, Omega kind of creates it. He's into the fight. And it emerges a couple times later on, because I think there's a powerful why. There's a few probably powerful whys behind Gungy's action, but I just like that at the beginning of the episode. He's in captivity, and the moment he's like, I got to go. This is my moment. And I love that start.
Yeah, no, I did too. And I think, you know, he just kind of he's fighting to survive, right? Who knows if he already got out of some containment and that's why they're, you know, you know, prodding him. But you know, the moment that's from the trailer, getting to see it in its full glory of the lightsaber being called to his his wonderful Wookiee paw and the big roar. It was really fun to see it in context, to see like the Bad Batch going, oh, that's what we're dealing with.
Yeah. Oh, there's a couple great little beats of Omega's face when she's kind of watching him kind of call the saber. But when it happens, there's such a like exactly what you did. Oh, just the picture gets big. And I love you talk about the context of the episode. Again, I maybe going back to repeating what we were talking about at the beginning. Great moment in the trailer. We witnessed that one live, right? Oh God, so great, so wonderful, wonderful. But to get the full context of it, it wasn't this classic. The Jedi is here to fight. It's about survival. It's about identity. It's about the need for that weapon in that moment, a symbol of who he was and maybe who he can be again. So the context of it was even more powerful.
Yeah, and then there's also that extra weight of, you know, not that we don't need more reasons to dislike the Vanguard Access droids, but we as an audience know what he went through to make that cool blade.
Yes.
You know, with the Wookiee, with the Kashyyyk wood, you know. So it's like, yes, give him back his lightsaber. So that first lightsaber ignite and roar is up there for me.
Yeah, it really is.
What are some other moments for you?
Sticking with Gunji, jumping on a droid's head and just stabbing him. I think it's when he saves the Omega there. I love that.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I thought it was great to see, like, he's been progressing in his Jedi training. I think, you know, connecting with the spiders, the creatures, the Kinrath was definitely Jedi. But I also liked when I think it's the first fight with Trandoshans. He does those double chest kicks where it's moving real fast, but it feels like I landed on your chest. I'm standing on you and kicking you at the same time.
Yes, yes, yes.
That was a good Jedi action move for me.
Love that there. True, true Jedi action there.
I'm going to assume that you have this one on your list as well. Moving on to the old Bad Batch. The perspective shot of Hunter just cold cocking that Trandoshan in the tank.
Oh.
Beautiful and scary.
I love that moment. It's so funny. I didn't write that one down, but there was another perspective shot I wanted to talk about. And I was like, oh my God, did Joseph guess that? You didn't. I still have one up my sleeve. There's just something about just a punch.
Yep. Just
punch.
Yep. Just the Trandoshan looking like, what's going on? And then here it comes. What was your perspective shot?
So it's not a like big giant action moment, but it just, I loved it. And there's so much action behind it. When they leave, the Vanguard, access droids, base, which by the way, I love the design of that base. Another weird shot. I thought it was a great Star Wars base. There's a great shot from behind Gunji as the ships leave in, and we get his view of almost like this view of his freedom that he headed in there again, and the journey begins, his new journey begins. I thought it was a great thing, great direction, great love to see storyboards behind it. Just I love that moment. It's such a wonderful action. We always joke this in this episode does have a ship landing, right? We always, ships landing and taking off are big in this series, and Clone Wars too. And that was a real powerful, different way to look at it. They really wanted you to see it from his point of view as they get out of there.
Yeah, no, that's a great perspective shot. This is not as deep. This is just enjoying the cathartic violence. The cat creatures, which in the subtitles are just called creatures, so I think they must not have a canonical name yet. It's of course a great Star Wars moment when the Wookiees are riding them into the final battle. Great plan, trees. But when that cat creature just does that casual backhand to the Trandoshan, it would totally had the vibe of a cat knocking a thing off its shelf just because it wants to, but just boop, yeah. This small little boop, and then bye bye Trandoshan. That was great.
That was great. I love those. It was also, by the way, I maybe forgot to say it up top. I love spending more time on Kashyyyk because we really haven't, outside of, say, video games, Fallen Order comes to mind, and maybe, you know, books, some stuff there. But for me, maybe it's a personal thing. Just I really felt this is the first time I spent a lot of time on Kashyyyk. just taking it all in, and I love that.
Yeah, it was a lot of quality time. Yeah, they're in Revenge of the Sith, really fighting through it. And yeah, the Jedi Fallen Order game, I'm sure countless other games, countless other books, but it is different to just really, really spend some quality time on the planet like this in on screen. Final action moment for me is I'm including it in action because we don't have a horror section. But Venomor being taken by the spiders, right?
Oh, and, yes.
Initially just kind of the screaming and the poking, but then he's all wrapped up in their webs and he is being pulled up. It's a great action moment because it is, you know, Venomor representing disrespect for Wookiee culture, nature, for representing the power of dominance, in chasing all those things, and then, you know, being taken by the very nature he disrespects. It's clear, but I still like highlighting it. But then what I really liked about it is watching this morning with the subtitles on, there's a kind of a long shot where Gungi watches him go up, and it Gungi's face drifts from sort of awe and sadness to, well, that's what you get. his little face goes hard, and the subtitle says, "Screaming continues." And it was funny and it was horrifying, but it was also like, it's underlining what Hunter is saying, as like, they're kids, they shouldn't have to be warriors too, but in this world they are.
Brilliant breakdown of the episode. I wrote that down as just, I didn't even know if I put it in comedy horror spot for there, but because I think why I started to look at the comedy side of it is it's the shot in the background, what you're describing with Gungi's experience. And then there's just the shot and the screaming. And a shout out to the voice of Venomor is JP Carlack, who is someone I know acquaintance wise through parties, who is the sweetest soul. He's just this very quiet, wonderful personality, big personality, but also the same as just a sweet, quiet soul. And to have him screaming for his life as the spiders take him up was a particularly personal thing of it too. So I love that you highlighted it. So well done. It's true horror indeed.
Yep. Yep. And I don't think Venomor is coming back from that.
I don't think so.
No. I think we can wrap his Wikipedia entry there. Mm-hmm. You have any other action moments?
I did put there's the moment again, keeping with what I said up top with Gungi, he strikes out against the Trandoshans really fast. And I wrote down the note, is that wrong? Well, I don't want to be right. And I don't want Gungi to be right in that moment either. He has good reason to do it. I just like that there was some action there, some quick decisions, and loved everything about that.
There was a real contrast between the, like, okay, let's use this stun bolts on clones. Let's give them the benefit of the doubt to a lot of these Trandoshans go down. I mean, there's some shoulder shots and some face punches, but I think a lot of them didn't make it. Yep. All right. So let's move on from that to comedy, whimsy, weirdness. What do you have here?
I did write that line you've mentioned before, but it's, the cause of that blastifier is either Echo or Omega. Most likely Omega. Tech is a never-ending source of comedy, unintentional and intentional comedy, but while also being, I think, very respectful of who he is, right? This isn't played for jokes, right? This isn't, the tech is not the joke. I think the situation, everything else is. His just straight cutting through the BS, this is what it is type of approach is always funny to me and always a great moment.
Yeah, no, I feel like the humor from Tech does come from the sort of the contrast of, mm-hmm. you know, analyzing everything, even things that probably don't need to be analyzed. He states as though they are, you know, this is like he had just, you know, scanned a genome or something, right? And like, we know Tech, but it is never coming from a place of making fun of him or saying it is wrong to process that world. It's just having fun with the contrast.
Yeah, 100%. It's a style of comedy. You can play around with it. It can be downright insulting. And I think every time with Tech, I think it's pitch perfect. My take on it, at least.
Yeah, no, I agree. What are some other beats?
Well, you have Wrecker, my man Wrecker, down in the Wookiee soup without any hesitation. Now, I always say I love Wrecker. I don't know. I'd be a little bit more Echo in this situation. I'm not food brave. All right. So I think I'd have to get to Echo where Echo is at the end of the episode, but my guy Wrecker just going, this is great, love it. And even it, just the way I was looking at it too, when they're when they're the scene where they're you know, got Gungi on the ship and the snack packs in front of him and all that stuff, some heavy stuff going on. And then Wrecker's just sitting there leaning, gnawing on a beef stick or something. Just everywhere they frame him, it's too me. It's scary how much it is me sometimes. And there's a little beat too. Sorry, I'm Bogart and the Wrecker moments. There's a beat too where after that, when they have a little connection with Gungi and Wrecker's still gnawing on a beef stick or about to, and Gungi comes over and Wrecker's like, all right, and like hands it to him. It's just so sweet and wonderful.
Yeah, I like how much once Gungi feels comfortable taking food from them, he's going to town. Yeah.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Yeah, I liked the moment of the Wrecker and the Wookiee roaring together. You know, it was a moment to me that also did feel like this. It's funny because the Wrecker has found a soulmate, but it's not making fun of Wrecker really, or you know, Wookiee culture to me. I liked how much he was like, this is great. Because we get to see it. Wrecker can't do anything without grunting. It's half the subtitles of an episode of Bad Batch is Wrecker grunts, right? So he's like, wait, instead of just grunting, I could roar? Awesome.
Yeah. 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 The mighty roar. Got it.
Yeah. This is not, there weren't that many to me, just like sort of more jokey lines. I felt like this was a heavier episode and the darkness was contrasted by all the, you know, beauty of the respect and all the great things we've talked about. So I wrote down an Omega line that was to me more about sense of wonder. Like it was so Omega's sense of wonder being, you know, dialed to 11 that it made me laugh of when the Wookiees were consulting with the trees and it was being explained to Omega that's their culture. She says, they're talking to the trees. Just that absolute sense of wonder that even though, you know, Omega gets it that the galaxy's not in a good place, but still just finding that sense of wonder everywhere she goes is just, it's one of the things that makes me love this show.
It's because I think it's a shared joy you and I and many other people have of Rey, right? Some of the great moments, even all the way stretching into Rise of Skywalker and the Aki Aki Festival of like, this is the joy in the galaxy. This is possibly why we're fighting and all those moments of, and it's never lost on me when it happens with Rey, and it's never lost on me with Omega. They're playing it so well. I'm really behind them on that one.
Yeah, and the absolutely great performance. I think that's it for me. Did you find any other moments?
I do like Venomor. You'd mentioned it in other stuff earlier, but when he gets a flamethrower cut in two, and he still tries to use it. It's a comic beat I always love. I'm good with that. It makes me giggle into my English muffin all the time.
Yeah, no, it's good, and that's a good action moment too. Of Gungi being like, "Oh, did you think I was trying to hit you? No, I was hitting your flamethrower."
Yeah,
great stuff. All right, let's move on to canon lore connections to other stories. There was the, of course, the mission that they were on to the Vanguard Axis droids was to sell some chain codes that Tech had made. If anybody needs a review from old Wikipedia, here's the basics that Wikipedia says. Chain codes identified specific biometric details of an individual and were made up of several numbers with the final four digits signifying the subject's age. They contained other information as well pertaining to topics such as a person's family, history, and criminal record. I think as an audiobook, all of Wikipedia should be recorded by Tech. You can always hear it in his voice. But the chain codes things are is fun because it starts in Mandalorian and then Bad Batch is like, great, let's run with it. Because they pop up a lot in Bad Batch.
Yeah, it's funny. I've just started my own Mandalorian rewatch and finished chapter one and was reminded. Yeah, chain codes, bounty pucks, all those kind of things. Kind of new, but they seem so old.
New, but they seem so old. Do you have any chain code thoughts? Are you happy to see them keep popping up in the way that they're being used? Yeah. Is this sort of vital thing? Is the Empire introduces them? We learn in the first season of Bad Batch, and it's really a form of control. They're really cracking down on people.
Yeah, I think it works, and it helps to world build, which is never one of my favorite phrases all the time. It can be misused or misunderstood, but that's a great little detail that I'd love to see. It just makes a lot of sense for the Empire.
Yeah, and I love that Tech's like, no, I'm really good at making these now, you know, and like in my head canon now, like I think when chain codes first pop up, people were like, well, why didn't Vader just use one of those to find Luke or whatever? Like, I think because Tech and a million other slicers made an absolute career out of fake chain codes.
Yeah, that's a good point.
Yeah. So the spiders were labeled in the subtitles as Kinrath, which is a great name, I think. So I did Google them on Wikipedia, and I guess they were a concept for an unfinished episode of Clone Wars that was shown at Star Wars Celebration 2015. So the grand tradition of absolutely no idea going unused in Star Wars. How did you feel about that? And where do these spiders rank for you on the creepy meter?
Pretty creepy. Not so much the size in the legs. I'm okay with spiders. Like I'm it's my job in the house here to remove most of them and take them outside. I don't kill them. I remove them as best I can. So I was fine with the design. It was the Stranger Things, underworld version of the mouse. What was going on up there that made me jump back in a little fear, but that just makes them a great sci-fi fantasy design.
Yeah, no, I really like that they were a little creepy because, you know, I had that. No, is that a mouth?
Yeah, right?
Is that a head or a leg? Okay. Mm-hmm. And that always makes it a little creepier when you can't identify where the body parts are. I know there's a part of you that's going to eat me, but where is it? A scary feeling to have.
Yeah. How am I going to be destroyed by you? Okay.
Yeah. Yeah, but I take your point that for anybody who has a trouble with spiders, this has been a rough few years in Star Wars.
Well, I my job to take the spiders out of the house. My fiance Grace, not a huge fan of spiders, and man, that Mando episode, chapter 10, was a challenge for us in this house.
Yeah, I understand having two different action figure sets specifically from that episode of of Snowy Mando and Grogu with horror face, and then they're packed in with the ice spiders.
Yeah.
I have the vintage and the Black Series because I couldn't resist. Anyway, I won't be gifting those to Grace, put it that way.
There you go.
Pivoting to new creatures with a connection to creatures that we do like, maybe. I'm not actually saying that is a guess. It's just an observation. So the cat-like creatures that the big things that the Wookiees are writing are just called creatures in subtitles. Maybe a name will be revealed down the line. But I was very affected, Ken, because they have okey pokey ears. Their ears look a lot like the little critter we see very briefly in Rise of Skywalker on Pisana called Okie Pokie. Did you look at those cat things and go, they got okie pokie ears?
Yeah, a little bit, not as direct as you, and I'm glad you brought it up because it makes me like them a little more. I'm definitely a dog before cat person, but I love all animals, so love the design, love the look. And it just was I love them because they're so just wonderfully oversized, but they are what they are, space cats. Yeah, even a little bit different than lost cats and stuff like that. They're just like, oh, space kitties with giant okie pokey ears, but even a little chihuahua ears. So yeah, I love everything about it. It's just it's so Kashyyyk. And that was the thing, even like I loved on Fallen Order, there's no part of me that thought Kashyyyk was just a normal forest world over the years, but Fallen Order really drove home the fact that there's a lot of things I don't want to run into on this planet.
I kind of hope that almost every appearance of Kashyyyk, we are introduced to three more animals instead of using repeats and just being like, they're everywhere. Yeah. So moving from the wonderful nature to the technological terrors, the tanks in this episode, it is said that they are Imperial tanks that the Trandoshans are using, but they do look a lot like the Trade Federation's old AATs. How did you feel about that?
I like that because it's a reminder of the time period, reminder of the probably equipment transition, and maybe some of those tanks were picked up by the Empire and put into use. And just for me, it was a canon timeline.
Yeah, no, I really took it as like, okay, well, whoever's manufacturing those are still pumping them out, but they're going to Palpatine now, pumping it out for Palpatine. So then the only other stuff I had is just kind of, you know, responding to the continuing Trandoshan Wookiee rivalry that's been established in Star Wars. A lot of the Wookiee culture stuff, seeing the head touch again, and I did a little bit of digging on some of it. Wikipedia is such a great resource for the history of the galaxy, but sometimes the behind the scenes information has what I'm looking for. And other times, like I was just trying to remember where did the Wookiee head touch start? You know, when was the Trandoshan Wookiee rivalry? Like some of that stuff can be hard to Google, but I was just really appreciating those bits of culture that have in history and world building that have grown up around the Wookiees and seeing them continue.
That's a good question. Yeah, I love digging in, and sometimes it is hard to track. I'm trying to think of the Wookiee head bop. Where did that one? Did it provide you an answer?
No, but I mean, I guess I can Google where did Wookiee head touch come from. I'm a little concerned about some of those keywords, but yeah. I guess what I'm saying is it's time for me to rewatch the holiday special and remember if it's in the holiday special. I mean, it's certainly some of the body language of Chewie, right? Like that head touch has been created in canon, you know, there's plenty of scenes in Empire where he just leans his head against something in sadness, and like the scene where Cliff Clavin tells Leia that they're shutting the doors, right? And he's leaning his head. And like, it's even more sad to be like, I don't have a Wookiee to comfort me with a forehead touch, so I'll lean on this pole.
God, breaking my heart. Yeah. I mean, honestly, like the first time I think it really got driven home to me was Solo. So mm-hmm. I'm not saying that's the beginning, but I think that's the first, especially if it's of an EU bit or something like that. There's a good chance I just missed it. So yeah, interesting track. Maybe someone out there listening can help us in a gentle way and let us know. But now I'm going to watch Empire and cry for the first time at that scene.
Yeah, yeah. And final thing, there's no identification of any of the other Wookiees that we meet besides Yana in the subtitles or in the credits. Maybe there will be in, you know, a Bad Batch, you know, info follow-up report, whatever they're doing on the StarWars.com these days. One of the Wookiees did look like the Wookiee we meet in the first episode of Rebels to me. He looked facially similar to Wolf Warro, but maybe not. Who knows?
Good point. Could very well be. Would track. Unfortunately.
Yeah, unfortunately. Mm-hmm. Any other canon or lore things that you noticed or wanted to talk about?
It's probably without a doubt an indirect connection, and we mentioned it in the thematic stuff earlier, but the fact that Gunji remembers Kashyyyk from his dreams. It just absolutely made me think of Leia and dreams of her mother, which is still, you know, one of the more interesting canon plot points in Star Wars that George played around with. We get that side of it, but just to have this kind of that kind of thing put out there, how much of it was through the Force, how much of it was actual memories, and I just kind of like that happening again.
Yeah, I really like the idea of Jedi as, you know, your new family, and Obi-Wan talks about it in the Kenobi show. I love that scene in part 3 where he's telling Leia, like, he thinks he had a brother, but, you know, he only remembers his family in these dreamlike glimpses, and the Jedi were his new family. Just thinking, like, how many young Jedi go through this, right, that they kind of have these misty dreams. Like we all have, but that's the way memories are from when we're very, very young, right? Mm-hmm. But then it was with a Wookiee, with Gunji, that we talked about this when we did the databank dive entry on Gunji. We're kind of being jokey about it. Like, does he get to climb the Uneti tree in the courtyard? Like, right. His environment is a big part of his identity, right? And is he dreaming of that, you know?
Mm. Mm. Yeah. Check out that episode, folks. See how much does the Jedi Order want you to have connect with your identity or everything, and you know, it's sometimes used as a criticism of the Order. But I like it here. Yeah, all fair questions. Yeah, I thought it was such a beautiful moment and ties in some of the themes and stuff you were talking about earlier. But just like what it means overall.
Yeah, it's just beautiful, beautiful stuff. All right, was there anything that you disliked or questioned in this episode?
I mean, just absolutely hated that they didn't tell me beat for beat how he survived Order 66 and ran away. I need that. I need that. No, and I'm like a little bit joking, and that just like you talk often to tip of the iceberg storytelling. That means it's a story for another day.
Yep.
You know, did the other Padawans we meet in the Gathering Arc? What happened to them? All that kind of stuff. You know, fair questions, good questions to ask. Not relevant to this story yet. And just made me think about that there. So just address it. I love this episode top to bottom, but if anyone has that issue, understand it and just say, hey, it means the answers could come later.
Yeah, I think so too. Of like, yeah, that'd be a great story to tell. You know, was he somewhere other than the temple or even as a Padawan or, a youngling? We don't know if he made it to Padawan, if he was out there. I do like that after we meet all of those younglings in the Gathering Arc, we see them again in the Clone Wars, almost always being trained by my beloved Tara Sanube, who we saw in the Clone Wars as having definitely been captured by the Empire and frozen as a trophy. So in my personal headcanon, Tara Sanube gave his life to save Gunji.
I I kind of think I need that to be the answer.
Yeah. Oh, I would have lost it if I didn't need that in this episode. This episode was beautiful, and I like that light touch of like, you must have been through a lot in this, in the whatever it is, a year and a half since Order 66, wherever we're at in their timeline now. You must have been through a lot to survive. I like keeping it a light touch, but if he had roared something, Tech had said, he's speaking of the Jedi Terra Sanube, I'd have been fine with that. The only thing I laughing through the tears. That's what this episode is about. I didn't dislike it. It's questioning. It's wanting more. It's every time we tell a story in one of these eras where a Jedi is safe again. You're like, oh, that's great, but for how long? Were you at all affected by that? It was this nice beat of Yana is entirely taking him in. The Bad Batch helped him. He's back with his people. He's, you know, reconnecting to Kashyyyk and Wookiee culture. Hooray. We know things don't go great for Jedi or Kashyyyk. Does that hang over the episode for you?
It only in tip of the iceberg storytelling way. I think I was asked by a friend off air about. I hear, you know, Gungi's back. Is he still going? Is he in the story? Is it wrapped up? And I was like, you know what? It could be both. But I think this episode really wraps up his tale, if that is what that's supposed to be. Right? This could be the final chapter in Gungi's story in this series, and maybe it's somewhere else. But he also could come back. So I love exploring that. You and I have talked often about, hey, as the years have rolled on in our actual fandoms, more and more Jedi are alive, and that does hang over it. But I no longer think it has to be, as much as I used to think, it has to be death, that Luke is the only one. You and I have talked about, you had said some stuff I was going to try to even quote you, sir, of a lot of episodes of it's about, you know, where you need to be and what your particular part of the fight or your particular part of the journey is. And Luke's is on a grand scale, but there's a lot of other Jedis who could be who they are, can help in other ways. And so I think Gungi kind of falls into that category for me right now. Does he come roaring back? Maybe he does, but I love that where they leave it. This could be the end of that trail for now for me, and I'd be okay.
Yeah, no, I think it could be that. Yeah. Like, you know, much like Ezra served this other purpose, needed to be in this other place. Like, you know, Gungi is a Jedi, the Jedi who, you know, defends Kashyyyk and, you know, keeps people alive throughout this Imperial horror.
Yeah. Yeah.
I got big hopes for Gungi.
Yeah. I would too. Yeah.
Is there anything that we haven't talked about then that you wanted to touch on?
No, I did want to, you know, shout out some little ship moments. I got to do that, so I think I'm all good there. Really good stuff.
The only thing for me, you already mentioned that Axis droid space station design was real cool. It looked like an evil omelet in space, and I like that.
It looked great. I mean, it looked like such a video game design, which I love. You know, like there's some great designs in all the video games in Star Wars, especially like Fallen Order, some wonderful ones. So yeah, I think it was a great little Star Wars detail.
Yeah, absolutely. And actually, speaking of that, we didn't really talk about the droids. The Vanguard Axis, according to my Googling, are new. They seem like a gang of mean droids. How do you feel about that? Did you want this to be the droid Gatra or the Haxian Brood? How did you feel like this was just like, hey, there are a lot of factions in the galaxy, and even small groups? Like, you know, I didn't get the sense that they're, you know, a massive power. It's like one small group. How did you feel about all that?
Yeah, I'm fine with it being something completely new. Maybe we deal with it all in a bigger way down the line. But yeah, great design too. Well executed. Yeah.
Great design. Scary. No baggage because they're just new scary droids. And also, you know, I think the Bad Batch having to have these dealings with droids when a lot of their their life is, hey, we were born to fight droids, you know, is a fun additional wrinkle. I suppose the other thing that we haven't talked about in a while, because there hasn't been a reason to, is Gonki. Where is Gonki? Is he safe? Is he all right? How are you feeling about our lack of Gonki in season 2?
You know what's? I have not thought about it a lot, and I think I know we've mentioned on some of the earlier episodes. But now that you say it again, like, man, yeah, conspiracy theory time.
Yeah, come on, give us donkey.
These shows do have budgets, and sometimes things like this are budget reasons. It's gonky. It's a block with legs. I'll pay for it. I'll pay for it.
Yeah, it doesn't even have to be high resolution. Let's just paste in like an N64 version of gonky.
That's fine. 8-bit gonky.
We missed the opportunity for a infamous David Letterman at the Oscars bit, too, to be like gonky, 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 gonky.
Love that.
All right. If you could have a figure or merch of any kind inspired by this episode of The Bad Batch, what do you want?
We need to go right to it, man. No ifs, ands, or buts about it. We need a Yana and Gunji return to home 2-pack with head bopping action.
That is right. That is absolutely right. I don't have any great clever answer. I just want Gunji in all scales action figure. We need some Gunji action figures. We need more Bad Batch action figures, period. But come on, I think Gunji would fly off the shelves.
Yeah, at the time of this recording, we're getting a lot of figure information flying off the social media shelves there, and including some really spectacular Funko Pops. Every time I think I'm 100% completely done with Funko, like love them, but not for me anymore, I saw like a Jabba and Salacious Crumb one. I was like, oh, well, that does probably belong on my shelf. And just a good like a Gunji Funko Pop with its saber out. That'd be great.
Oh, yeah. Hey, did you see that one of the Ewok that comes with the Imperial helmets that the Ewok's drumming on?
Yeah, I did. Yeah, I did.
Did you pre-order it?
I want to, but I don't I just can't. Yeah. No.
Yeah. Welcome to Whispering About Toys, our new segment here on Force Center.
It hurts.
Final thing I want, because I was lucky to recently visit Galaxy's Edge and have that immersive experience. You know, if Disney keeps wanting to build immersive experiences, it would be great if they could just create Kashyyyk, because I would really just like to sleep in a treehouse.
Yeah. Look, I mentioned like spending time in Kashyyyk. Battlefront 2, a lot of those games have great maps, and you do get to wander. And so I'm with you. Sleep in a nice Wookiee hut would be great.
Yeah, exactly. All right, that is our big look at this particular episode of Bad Batch. We are loving this season. We love this particular episode. I think I probably said Gunji and Gungi, trying to say Gunji. We want to respect this wonderful Wookiee character. Ken, where can people find us?
Hey, you can find us on Twitter at Force Center Pod. We're on Hive Social if you're still over there at Force Center on Facebook and Instagram. And we are on YouTube. We are still trying to build towards 7,000 subscribers, our next plateau to reach. So if you want to subscribe, head over there. We have, at the time of this recording, you might be listening later, but Figure Fights, our new YouTube only show, debuts February 2nd at 10 a.m. Pacific. Also, we start to have some shorts up there. There's a figure review of the Gentle Giant Princess Leia Organa Milestones figure up there. More of those coming. So subscribe over on the YouTube channel if you'd like. You can get merch at tpublic.com/loser/user/ You're a loser if you don't click there. Hey, you can also find the podcast on a lot of different spots, including iHeartRadio, Google Podcasts, Stitcher, TuneIn, and more. Just search. You'll find us. You can support us directly over at Patreon at patreon.com/ForceCenter, or you can go to our personal sites like kennapsock.com. Are at Ken Napsok to find information on all the other things I do and the things Joseph does, not at KenNapsok.com, but at your own website, sir. Yes?
Right. Yes. You can find me at JosephScrimshaw/loser, which just can't believe that we haven't said that more often. It's not an easy thing to say, slash user, right? People must say that all the time. Yeah, join me at /loser. Sorry. Yes, but you can find me on all the social media at Joseph Scrimshaw. I'm still on Twitter. I'm trying to find some more friends on Instagram, all sorts of different places for social media. And while you're checking out of Force Center's presence on YouTube, you can go to my page. Actually, you can just scroll down to the bottom of the Force Center page and find all of our YouTube personal pages, myself, Ken, and Jennifer. After Figure Fights premieres, I'll be adding a new short film to my YouTube page. So please go check us out there. But that is it. For now, for myself, for Ken, for Gunji, this has been The Bad Batch.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.